Each year, our elders choose a theme, and you have seen that. If you notice the poster in the front or the readings that we've done that center around this theme, and this year it's doing good to everyone. But what we find is that in Paul's command to do good to everyone, it doesn't end there. He continues on and he says, especially those of the household of faith. So if we put that in a little bit more modern language, it might be something like, do good to everyone, but be sure not to forget the household of faith. It's the fear that what may happen is that we get so busy looking for opportunities around us, we may miss what's at hand. And so last week we dealt with this and we talked about the different things that we can do for one another. We talked about how that we're building each other up and helping each other and bearing one another's burdens. But what I'd like for us to do this week is to take it just a bit further and compare it to some other passages in the New Testament that sound very familiar. Let me show you these. First of all, in Ephesians 2:19, the apostle says, so then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. And then we find our theme passage here in Galatians 6:10, so then as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone and especially those who are of the household of faith. We then look over to 1 Timothy 3:15 and Paul writes this, if I delay, you may know how you ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and buttress of the truth. And then finally, we find the apostle Peter writing this, for it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? We see here that every one of these passages is talking about the household. But let's take out the different one for just a minute. You look at these, and we find that our passage in Galatians 6 is worded a little bit differently, the household of faith. So let's just take that out for a minute and think about what we're told concerning these other three. Go ahead and look in your Bibles, if you will, over to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. And what we're going to find in this section of Ephesians is kind of a crescendo. The apostle has been building up to this point for some time within the letter. And so I want us to back up just a bit and to get some context for what's going on here. First of all, he's going to tell us how we are welcomed into this household of faith. So if you look in verses 4 and 5, Paul writes this, but God being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which He loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace, you have been saved. Here the apostle says, the way that one comes into the household of God is totally by His grace. There is no earning one's way in. There is no building up a number of good deeds to get in. It is by the grace of God. And the one who's going to be welcomed in is the one who accepts that grace. That's what he tells us down in verse 8. When he says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing, but it is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast. It is by God's grace, the one who is welcomed in is the one who has faith that this grace can save. And for the one who accepts that faith, there are going to be great blessings. And that's what the apostle is now going to describe. We're not going to dwell on this a long time, but just look at the list that he gives us in such short order here. He says in verse 17, he came and preached peace to you. One of the blessings of being in the household of God is the peace of that restored relationship. And when that relationship is restored, the apostle says, you've got access to the Father, verse 18. Through Him, talking about Christ, we have both access in one spirit to the Father. And what does that then mean for us? That the Father is making us a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. Verse 19, as the thought continues, you're no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens. And if we are citizens, what does that then mean? As this passage indicates, it means that we are members of the household of God. So just think about that idea for a minute. Here is God in His greatness who has said, by My grace, you're welcomed into the household if you have the faith to accept it. And if you are willing to accept it, then you have peace and you have access to Me and you're a citizen of My kingdom and you are a member of My family. Now, with all of that said, the crescendo part of this is the fact that all of us are joined. And so verse 22 says, together you're making up the household of God. Look at verse 22. In Him you are being built together into a dwelling place for God. That's who we are. As we all join together in accepting this grace that God has given and we're baptized into the family by faith, we become a part of God's dwelling place. When we think about all of these great blessings, there are things that we need to consider that relate especially to us. One of those being that God is in charge of who's welcomed into His household. As the one who created the household, as the one who has opened the door to the household, it's God who gets to decide who comes in. Now, why is that such an important point for us? Well, the fact is, God has told us how to come in. If you look at verse 17, He says, once again we'll read this, He came and preached peace to you who were far off and to those who were near. How do we come in to the household of God? It's through the preaching of Jesus Christ. Now that's an essential point for us to get down. Because what that means for you and me is this, is that I must never, ever seek to change that plan. I must never try to put something different than the way God has said one can come into this household, and as well, I must never be willing to accept a changed message. Now here's the thing. When you go out into the world and you start asking how to be saved, you are going to get a plethora of answers. There's only one answer. It's the one God has given. And there's only one that matters, and it's that one that God has given. And so when you and I think about coming into the household of God, being members of the household of God, it means God is in charge of opening the door. Let's keep that thought in mind. As we continue in our passages that deal with these kinds of things, we also come to a code of conduct. You may remember, if you're old enough, you used to get a report card, and on one side you had your grades, and on the other side you had your conduct. You remember those? Talks too much, plays well with others. And what the teacher would do is mark you, you know, excellent or average or needs improvement. And the idea is that part of educating someone is learning how to get along with other people. I think that's one of the great things about school is you get a pretty early education of this is how you get along with folks. God uses the same idea when He talks about His household. And so as the apostle here is writing to Timothy, he's admonishing Timothy as an individual Christian, but also as a preacher who's going out to others, and he's saying, look, if I'm not there, that's okay. If I'm delayed, it's okay. Because you need to know how you ought to behave in the household of God. And then he describes what that household is, the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of truth. Let's look over to 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3. Again, we're building up to this point, and the apostle is admonishing Timothy, you need to know the code of conduct. You need to know how to behave as a member of the Lord's church. And as a part of that, kind of going back to our previous point, he says, let me remind you who makes up the household, because it's the one who confesses Jesus Christ is Lord. And so if we look here in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15 is the verse we're dealing with. Let's just read it again. If I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of the truth. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. He was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up into glory. The one who believes, who puts faith in these things, is the one who's welcomed into the household. And the one who's welcomed into the household has a certain amount of expectations associated with it. And so the remainder of this letter to Timothy is going to be a series of things. In fact, if your Bible's open there, you can just look on down and you're going to see all of these different things Paul is saying that is important if one is conducting oneself appropriately in the household of God. So let's think about that for a minute. What does that mean for us? If there is a code of conduct, it means that yes, Ephesians 2 describes the great blessings we have, the privileges we have of access to the Father, of access to the Spirit and the Son, and all of these things, but it also has expectations associated with it. That if we are coming into the household of God, and we are welcomed into the family of God, and if we have confessed this Son, who's described in verse 16, there is an expectation for us of how we're going to behave. And guess who gets to set the code of conduct? It's the one who welcomes us into the household. And so then, with these expectations, that means that God says to each of us, for everything I tell you to do, I'm transforming you into the image of my Son. Here's the danger. We look at all of these things and we think, oh, there's so many rules. God says we've got to do all of these things. Every rule of God is for a purpose. Every rule of conduct is to say to us, this is how you become like my Son. God welcomes in. God begins to remold us into the image of Jesus, so that we can know how we should behave in the household of God. Which leads us to our third passage then, and that is remaining in the household of God. The Apostle Peter gives a very sobering passage here in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 17. You can be making your way over there if you'd like, in which he is very much drawing on the Old Testament prophet Ezekiel. Same idea that Ezekiel was sent to preach, where he's saying, look, there is a time that judgment is going to come, and that judgment is going to begin at the household of God. And then the very sobering note, and if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who don't obey the gospel? The idea that he's presenting is we need to be very concerned about bringing people to God, but we also need to be concerned about staying faithful to God ourselves. And so here is a great danger that the one who welcomed us into the household and the one who set the code of conduct for us is not taken seriously. And if we look at this and we say, well, I'm not going to take him seriously, the Apostle Peter is saying, there is danger for you because your membership in this household is based on the head's judgment. There's a very false idea in lots of the religious world that says once we become a Christian, there is no possible way to lose our salvation. And I'll tell you this, it's tough to. God is patient and kind and merciful. It is hard to lose our salvation because God's going to stay after us to come back and to come back into faithfulness in the household. Yet, what Peter is saying is there is a breaking point. There is a point where God shows us the door and closes that door with us on the wrong side. Look at how many times Jesus talked about someone being cast out into outer darkness. And what Peter says is, your seriousness is going to be seen in how faithful you are to Him. And so if you're here in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 17 is where we were reading. Back up just a verse. He says, "Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name." Here we find Peter saying, look, there are going to be times when you are going to be tested, when God in His judgment is going to look and see if you're willing to stand up for Him. So what then do you and I need to get from this? Well, here's one thing that Peter's going to make abundantly clear. He's going to say that God is faithful to those who are faithful. If you're put in a difficult situation, if you have these difficulties coming down on top of you, God says, I'm with you. And if you stay faithful to me, you can rest assured I am going to be faithful to you. It may not appear that way on the surface, but He's saying, you can rely on the fact I will never leave you or forsake you. But with that, it's the realization that the fiery trials will come. That if we are going to be members of the household of God, with all of the blessings that come with it, and all of the responsibilities of God taking us and remolding us into the image of His Son, He says that just like my Son went through these things, so too will you. And you need to stay faithful to me. And that is the requirement, that we trust that God knows what He's doing. How easy it is for us to think God has abandoned, God has forsaken. If God loved me, things would be going okay. But what Peter is saying is look, you are going to have these things happen, but you can trust that God is with you. Now, with all this said, let's go back to that passage that we started with. And when we look at Galatians chapter 6, we see that there's a difference. What Paul told the Ephesians, what he told Timothy, what Peter told his audience, what they're telling us, is that, look, your place in this household very much is based on your relationship with the head. The household of God. Three times over, the term is used. But yet, when we look at Galatians chapter 6, what we're finding here is a little bit different wording that's pointing out our relationship with fellow members of the household. Especially those... Now, could Paul have said, especially those who are of the household of God? Yes, and we would never have had another thought about it, right? That would make perfect sense because it's true. But yet the term he uses is an indication of our relationship to one another, especially those who are sharing the same faith. The reason that we're in this household is because all of us are sharing our faith. So what does that mean for us? Well, let's begin by talking about what it doesn't mean. When we think about being fellow members of the household of the faith, what is not my job as a member of this household? One thing that I hope stood out clearly as we discussed Ephesians chapter 2 is that the conditions for coming into the household of God are not my responsibility. That belongs to God. He alone can do that. He alone says who's in, who's out. And so what that means for me is that I must be very careful that I'm not trying to force my will on this. That's a lot easier to do than we may imagine. Now, one of the most overt that we could look at, that's still with us in modern times, but for sure if you back up 30, 40, 50 years ago, you would see this. And that would be prejudice based on race, color of skin. That you would oftentimes find within little bitty towns one church that was all this color and another church that was all this color, and there was no mixing and mingling. That was wrong. And it's still wrong. That if we're saying, no, I can't allow this person who looks different than me into the household of God, I have just gotten into God's territory. And read the Bible if you want to see God's attitude when we start trying to walk in His shoes. We can also say that about ethnicity. We can say that about so many things along those lines. That is not what God says. In fact, just the opposite. He says there is no Jew or Greek. And if we wanted to put that in a little bit more modern terms, there is no this region or that region. There is no this color or that color. But it can also go much deeper than that, and perhaps a little bit more subjective, that we're not even perhaps realizing what we're doing if we're not careful. Of seeing someone and saying, well, someone of that background surely is not going to fit well within the household of God. After all, this person grew up and you fill in the blank, or this person's economics, or this person's political beliefs, they're just not going to mesh with the members of the household of God. Do you see what dangerous ground we're walking on when we do that? What we're saying is, though God in His grace has flung those doors wide open to anyone who will accept Him in faith, I'm going to close the door a bit. Therefore, you and I must be very, very careful about that. And that also means for us that we must make sure that when we are telling people about being welcomed into the household of God, we are teaching His plan. We are telling that plan to everybody because you and I are not wanting to exclude. We're wanting to bring people in. We're wanting people to come to know this grace that we know. But yet let's make sure that we know what that plan is. And let's make sure we've got a keen understanding of God's grace. I'm afraid sometimes we allow that to go when we're trying to convince someone they need the Lord. And we start talking about what needs to be done in baptism, and that is certainly important, but it must begin with what God has done for mankind, the mercy that He's shown. And then, once that picture is established, we begin then to teach where God says, look, at baptism, that's where you're showing me your trust. And when you go down in that water, that's where your sins are washed away. That's what we're teaching. His plan. His invitation to come. And not our own. What else is not my responsibility? And that's setting the standards of behavior. Every one of us has our likes and dislikes. Every one of us has our opinion on things. And how easy it is to begin merging our code of conduct with God's. I've mentioned to you before, a lot of times when I'm working on a sermon and I'm thinking about a point like this, I just like to see what's in the internet world on the topic. So I just put in the idea that Paul mentioned there to Timothy so that you'll know how to behave yourself in the household of God. Do you know what came up first? It was churches who had established their code. And they had said, members of this church will. We're not talking about matters of salvation. It's you're going to do this, and you're going to dress like this, and you're going to do this. And it was a list of what they had. And I'm afraid that's what we tend to think about when we consider conduct in the house of God. Again, that's not our standard. If I were to go around this room, we would all have probably varying opinions on dress code, on how to use time, on the best time to do this or that. We would all have opinions on that, and those may be okay, they may be valid. But what I must refrain from doing is putting them on par with the conduct that God insists upon. Because you know who did that? It's the group we love to hate. Right? We talk bad about the Pharisees. Jesus did too. But you know what their problem was? They had begun to equate their code of conduct with God's. They were teaching their code just like it was God's. And how perilously close you and I can get to doing that very thing. In the past, I've been associated with two congregations, one of which did, one that came close but then backed up from it, of establishing a dress code for worship. Now, that may sound like a reasonable thing, but who gets to decide that? One of the points I tried to make to the elders of that church is, look, we can teach modesty, but when we begin telling people this is what you can and can't do without having the Bible to back it up, we are walking in God's territory again. We must be very careful about that. And not that this church is doing it, but any church can face the temptation of saying, our members will X, Y, Z. And that's fine if it's God's code of conduct. But if we begin putting our opinions in place of that, we are getting ourselves in deep trouble. What else is not our responsibility? It's bringing judgment on the family of God. Now let me explain this one. Because there are places in the Bible that talk about administering judgment to the family of God. But it is always God's protocol. Go to that brother. If he doesn't listen, take two with him. If he doesn't listen, take it before the church. If he still won't listen, let him become like a tax collector. You see how he's established all of that out? Or if there's someone who refuses to repent of a sin, then you cast that person out so that you can welcome him back in when he repents. It's God's plan. And so what that then means is that personality clashes, disagreements I have with brethren over other things, I don't allow judgment to come on that. I don't allow my own thoughts or disagreements. Some brother and I can't get along, and so we start talking about God's judgment. That's not my job. And might I add, it's not my job to assign people to their eternal fate either. We better be very hesitant before we start talking about who's going to hell and who's not, because the last time I looked, God said, I'll take care of that. When I think about these things, I am so happy God has taken this off the table. God has said, this is not my responsibility. But what is? When we think about the responsibilities that we do have to one another, what is that? Well, one of the things that we are to do as members of the household of faith is to help one another keep the faith. Let's see what the writer of Hebrews said about that. In chapter 3, he says, therefore, holy brothers, you who share in a heavenly calling, that's what we're talking about this morning, consider Jesus the apostle and high priest of our confession, who was faithful to Him who appointed Him, just as Moses was also faithful in all God's house. For Jesus has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, as much more glory as the builder of a house has more honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now Moses was faithful in all God's house as a servant, to testify to the things that were spoken later. But Christ is faithful over God's house as a son, and we are His house. But note the condition. If, indeed, we hold fast our confidence and are boasting in our hope. You know how you get kicked out of the household of God? Stop trusting Him. How do we lose our favored position as a son? Stop following the Son. So how do we stay faithful? We go just a few more verses down in verse 13. He says, but exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. That word exhort's an interesting word. It's kind of like you just nudge up as close to somebody as you can. The writer is saying that's a relationship that members of the household of faith need to have. That we need to be there for each other, that we are exhorting because sin can work, and it can work quite quickly, to harden our hearts. You let somebody get involved in sin or begin to drift away from the Lord, and nobody checks on that person for 3 or 4 weeks, or nobody checks on that person for 2 or 3 months, and before too long, that person is gone, deceived. That's our job. Every one of us has our moments of strength, and every one of us has our moments of weakness. And in those moments of weakness, we need someone who's in the moment of strength to come nudge up beside us and lift us up and tell us we can do it through the grace of God. That's the job we have. Specifically in this verse, Galatians 6, of doing good for one another. Let me also say, one of our jobs is to work to keep the peace. That can oftentimes be very hard to do because, as we mentioned earlier, we all have our opinions. We all have our thoughts. We all have the way we think things ought to go. You ever see this where you work? You know, something's happening and boss makes a decision. The first thing you do is, well, if I was the boss, I would have. Sometimes those ideas are really good and we need to tell the boss. But sometimes it's better just to be quiet, to do our job, and to keep the peace. And if that's true in the workplace, it's true in the household of God, that God's saying, I've given you the code of conduct, I've told you how to behave, I've told you how to treat each other, so if you can live peaceably with all, that's what I expect you to do. And that's what I can do for you. And that's what you can do for me. And if I find that I'm just kind of that cantankerous person, I'm just that person who just has to get a word in edgewise, I need to change. But that's just my personality. Then my personality needs to change. I fear sometimes we try to take a cop out, don't we, when we say, I was just born that way. If I was just born that way, then there's no old and new man of sin, is there? If I can't change, there's no putting away those things that make me unlike Jesus. But if I look at myself and I find myself just being a not very friendly person, I need to change that. I need to be that comfort to others. And when it does come time when there's doctrinal error, when it's things we can't just say, well, that's opinion, we're going to put them away. When it is doctrinal error, let's approach that with love. Let's approach that as two souls that are really trying to determine the conduct in the house of God. And to look at that from the standpoint of brotherly love rather than as enemies. That's my responsibility. And then finally, let me just reiterate what we talked about last week. And that's to seek out the opportunities to do good. They're not just going to fall in my lap. Well, I say that. God may very well open doors for us. He may very well put us in the right place at the right time, but I've got to do it. And if I'm looking for opportunities to do good, they are going to abound. And when you think about a congregation of the size of this one, I can assure you there is always a need. Sometimes I get a little frustrated when I hear people say, well, I just don't, and this is kind of a nebulous term, but they'll say, I just don't want to be a part of a big church because there's just nothing for me to do. And it's like, really? You've got 250 people who are struggling just like you struggle, and there is nothing you can do. The majority of the work of a local church is not what happens here. It's what's happening in our relationship as fellow members of the household of faith. As we seek to please the head of that household and to help others to do the same. I love hymns, and I love older hymns especially, because some of the hymnists of years past were such poets. One of them was Fanny J. Crosby. If you'll look, many of the older hymns that, if you're around my age, probably grew up on, were written by her. And I think one of the most beautiful lines ever penned for a hymn is actually the fateful verse 3 of a hymn that she wrote called Rescue the Perishing. She wrote, "Down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings lie buried that grace can restore. Touched by a loving heart, wakened by kindness, chords that were broken will vibrate once more." That's what we're talking about this morning. We use the song Rescue the Perishing as an invitation song, but it's more of an invitation song to be an encouragement to someone who's perishing. In just a minute, we're going to sing that song. And I want you to think about two things as we do. If you are not a Christian, you have not become a part of this household. God has said that He wants to welcome everyone in. He says, "I don't want anybody to perish, but for all to come into my house." But He says that's by accepting my grace and understanding that your belief, your trust is going to be seen when you confess the name of my Son and you renounce your past way of life and you are buried in the waters of baptism for the forgiveness of your sins. When you come out of those waters, you are in the household of God. And I want us also to think that we need to be faithful members of that household. And so if there are things that we have done that violate the conduct of one who is a part of that house, and we need to repent of that, this morning we'll pray with you about it. But as we sing, I also want you to think about where you are in this, not just in your relationship to God, but with each other. Can I be encouraged to go to that one whose heart has been crushed by the tempter? To speak the words of love and kindness so that chords that were broken can vibrate once more. We have a lot to think about and a lot of responsibility. If you'd like to come into this household this morning, it'll be the best decision you ever made. And as we think about helping each other, isn't it nice to know that as we look around this room, there are people who are concerned about my eternal fate. Let's be true to God, and let's be true to one another as we do good for one another. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, won't you come while we stand and sing together?